Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America, Europe, and the world, this is David Duke. And today, I think I'm going to have a profoundly interesting program for all of you. And it's a show I've been needing to do for a while. And I don't want people to misunderstand this show. Because this is a show about religion, but it's not going to be a religious spiel. It's not going to be a religious sermon. I'm not going to put on my Christian hat and proselytize for Christianity. But I am going to talk about religious aspects of the world we live in. And the religion that has the biggest impact on the way the world is, and I mean this in the sense of the world being so screwed up. And that religion, and I hope that you bear with me and give me a chance to make my case, that religion, that fundamental religious ideology, theology, entity, is called Judaism. And whether or not you believe in Judaism, whether or not are you an opponent of Judaism, it is really, really important to know the impact of Judaism on this world over the last couple thousand years. And it has had an enormous impact on the world. It's had enormous impact on non-Jews in the Middle East and elsewhere around the world. It's had a huge impact on the Jewish people. And I'm going to argue here that Judaism, even for the Jews, has not been a positive thing. That it has hurt Jews far more than helped them, ostensibly, even though it is a Jewish supremacist religion that believes by following these precepts they will rule the world and have the power of the world, which sounds like some sort of a conspiracy comic book or a James Bond movie about Spectre or something. But Judaism is an ideology. It is a religion, but it's also an ideology. It's a way of life. And Judaism is based on two things. One is the religious aspect of Judaism, and that is something that goes beyond religion. It goes into philosophy. It goes into understanding, like you would understand Plato's Republic as a code for rule. The great books by Plato, which I so devoured when I was a young kid, it is a idea on how to run a state, how to run a nation, and it's got a lot of interesting ideas in it. One of the aspects of Platoism, or Platonism, is the idea that you need a religious base. And if you can pick something that's far back, that can't be easily disproven or contested, all the better. And then you can basically make the religion up, or you can present the religion any way you want to, and who's going to know the better of it? Which is interesting. And religion can be a tremendous source of inspiration. And the idea that the elite of a country have this hotline to God, that they are doing the word of God, they have a connection to God. And God, they're listening to God. And they're in communication with God. And they are of Him. And God is their Father. And God is their this universal power. And this is a God, by the way, of war and vengeance. This is a God of jealousy. It's hard to think of a God as a jealous God, but that's what it says in the Torah and the Talmud. He's a jealous God. It's a God of mass punishment. even punishment for innocent children for four or five generations for violating certain laws. We're going to talk about what Judaism may have begun as. We're going to talk about Judaism as in the way it's been practiced in terms of its rituals and its ideas among Jews and others, and the impact that it's had on other peoples. We're going to talk about that today and go into a lot of truths here. And it's a difficult subject for a lot of people, especially Christians, because a lot of Christians believe that every word in the Bible is decreed by God and it's written in stone and this is what God says or not, even though the earliest manuscripts, original manuscripts, first of all, there are no original manuscripts. Looks like we have no original manuscripts for the Old Testament. We have some manuscripts that seem to be copies of the New Testament. But even the New Testament, it's very hard to prove that every single line was exactly what Jesus said or exactly what the apostles said. However, we can get a great sense by reading the Old Testament and reading the New Testament fully in a documented way, and what's the word for it, in a complete way. The way that you don't just cherry pick a few passages of your choice, which may seem to even contradict other passages, but to look at the general message and the repeated message again and again. And that's why we can say, as far as Christianity is concerned, we have a very good idea of the message of Jesus Christ, and it is so clear and so oft repeated and so passionately expressed. And his passionate message was, he even had the disciples ask him, you know, what is the great commandment? What is the summary of your teachings, Lord? And Jesus said, the summary of my teachings is that you love God, and you love God, and God is me, and I am a God of love. I am a God of forgiveness. I'm a God of mercy. I'm a God of kindness. I will give you your daily bread. I won't take away your daily bread and give you some sort of manna, which you don't know what in hell that is. I want you to ask me for things you need. In fact, there's one great parable he does of the neighbor in which a man has a visitor coming. He doesn't have any bread, and you got to give your neighbors food when they come and visit late at night. You get there after midnight. And so the man who went to his neighbor, it's after midnight, and his kids are asleep. And he says, look, I really need some bread. I got to feed my friends who come in from out of town. They just have to have some bread. And the guy says, get out of here. My kids are asleep. My kids are in bed. I'm not letting you in. But the man who was doing the prayer, or not the prayer, but the request, I guess is the right way to put it, to his neighbor for bread, he was persistent. Persistent. So he kept asking. He said, listen, please, I've got to get some bread for these friends who have come in. They need it. They're hungry. They've been on the road. They've given me bread when I was on the road, visiting them. So, whatever. So ultimately, the neighbor relents and lends him a couple loaves of bread for his guests. And the lesson that Christ was saying was that it's good to be persistent when asking for what you need from me, from God, from our Father in heaven. Don't be afraid to be persistent. You know, please let me know what you need, what you want, what you desire. I'm listening to you. I care about you. I want to help you. I'm not here to punish you. I'm not here to hurt you. And that contrasted, you know, a great deal with the God that's presented in the Old Testament, for instance, during the Exodus, when the Israelites They broke some of the rules. They broke the rules. They had 613 rules, which were impossible to keep. And they worshipped some calves. They did some other stuff. And God, first thing he did is order Moses to round up a bunch of about 3,000 and kill them. And then instead of going over to Canaan, the promised land, which was promised to both Moses, to Aaron, and to the Israelites, and there were supposed to be about 600,000 of them. That's what biblical scholars believe, because 600,000 was said to be the troops. So when they figured out the women and children, it would probably be about 2.5 million total. But instead of taking the very short walk, and it's a short walk, well, it's not just around the corner, but it's basically a week or two. 2 weeks you can walk from Cairo to the Promised Land. Promised Land. By the way, the Promised Land was land that was lived in by other people. It wasn't your land. A lot of, and that's some of the issues sometimes we get with the Old Testament and Christians. We don't quite understand it because we have the Ten Commandments, which Moses also brought down from Sinai, and the Ten Commandments say, love thy neighbor as thyself, and basically, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, thou shalt, many, many things like that. And what people don't understand, Christians don't understand when they read that, this was the Jewish commandments. And when they said neighbor, we might be thinking neighbor is the guy that lived next door to us. Might be anything, black, white, yellow, whatever. That's not the way Jews define neighbor. They define neighbor as only fellow Jewish countrymen, your fellow Jews, the sons of the Jewish people. And it says that explicitly in another place as well, in Leviticus. In fact, they quote off in Leviticus, which says, love thy neighbor as thyself. And they try to say, this shows you that Judaism is universal for everybody and this type of thing. And then they quote a couple of passages of being nice to the sojourner or people to visit or something. But the interesting thing is, the neighbor quote, they just don't quote you the line before, love thy neighbor as thyself. And that line is that a neighbor is the son of your own people. In other words, so when you get this commandment not to kill, not to steal, not to murder, not to lie, cheat, whatever you do, horrible things to do, when you get that commandment, that's a commandment not to kill fellow Jews, not to covet fellow Jews' wives, not to bear false witness against fellow Jews in a court of law or any place else. No, it's just like the way that they separated the idea of slavery. Jews were allowed to take slaves, non-Jewish slaves, and keep them forever as an inheritance. Pass them on to your generations forever and ever and ever. Ironically, there were a lot of very, very sad exceptions put in there, this technicalities. You know how they talk about courts of law where somebody commits a terrible crime, but they get out on a technicality? Jewish law is all kinds of technicalities, let me tell you. So it says that they can't keep Jews as slaves. Well, they can actually keep a male slave for 6 years, but then again, they can't in some ways. In other words, if he's a slave, for instance, and his wife and kids from it, that could belong to the, just to other, not to him. But the odd thing is that the Old Testament is very, very nasty when it comes to women. Women are not treated that way. Men need to be freed after 6 years. Women, they don't get that. It's like a permanent bondage, and it's a pretty tough thing, folks. And there's things like usury. Usury is condemned to the Old Testament. It's also condemned to the New Testament. It's also condemned in Islam is condemned in many religions around the world because it's a common, criminal, horrific practice, as Maimonides explains, the famous Jewish scholar, the most famous Jewish scholar in European history. He says, you cannot loan with interest, usury, on a fellow Jew. You can do that to a Gentile, but you can't do it to a fellow Jew because usury is nezik. It is biting. I mean, this is about the worst thing. You get this image in your mind of like a snapping turtle biting you or a lion biting you with his teeth into your flesh. And that's what it really is. Because loan sharking has always been criminal. And there's always been unscrupulous people who had lots of money, and it's the most natural organized crime, long before there were even much evidence of any dope or any other things like that. Long before they ever had some of these other aspects that they could make money from. It was a thing if you had money and you loaned money. And most of the population was illiterate, and you could loan money, and then have interest rates that are impossible. And you get deeper and deeper in debt. And then the enforcers come, and the organized crime is associated with this greatly. And by the way, even though it's not apropos, it's not permitted to say this, it's called anti-Semitic to point this out. There is no race in the history of the world that has been more likely, probable, to engage in massive criminal organized crime than have been Jews. Even the great Martin Luther wrote a whole book called The Jewish Lexicon, pointing out how even during the 1500, 1600 AD, there was massive Jewish organized crime. And it was so Jewish that almost all the terms for these organized behaviors, like loan sharking, which was nezik, like other sorts of evil, murder for hire, whatever it is, right, that they had Jewish names for it all, because that's how prominent Jews were, even though Jews were a small, small percentage of the population. Interesting, huh? Organized crime. And the same thing existed in America. Thomas Dewey broke up Murder Incorporated, which was a massive Jewish organization. And it did have a couple of Italians in it, and they tried to act like this was a partnership between Jews and Italians. No, it really wasn't. There were a couple of Italians involved, one or two famous Italians. But if you read the list of the Jews involved in Murder Incorporated, including Meyer Lansky, who became the biggest organized criminal in the United States of America, the richest too, who didn't go to jail. And all we hear about is Italians, because we got a Jewish media, they don't want to talk about Jewish organized crime because that doesn't make Jews look good. But anyway, so we get Jewish organized crime going, and they had loan sharking. And the way loan sharking works is you were desperate for money, you're trying to feed your family, or you got into gambling or some other illicit things and you had to pay it back, and then they started compounding interest on you. And pretty soon you became desperate. And pretty soon they're going to be cutting off your fingers, and they're going to be cutting off your hands, and they're going to be cutting off your feet. They're going to be cutting off your ears and cutting off your head eventually. Ooh, it's a bad situation. It's terrible. And the idea is to put the pressure on you so much that even though the loan may have been a very small amount, it may not even be anywhere proportionate to what you might have owned, the flat you owned, the house you owned, the possessions you own. It may have been a small portion of that. But you had to pay it back, and you had to pay it back with the interest. And ultimately, they got everything. They bankrupt you. And they steal then your house that your family lives in, or any other enterprise or business that you might own. It's a horrible thing. It's called usury. And Jews in the Torah made usury a a thing which Jews could practice to non-Jews, but not to Jews, because it was a terrible thing. What I pointed out to you, talking about slavery and usury, okay, let's just start with those two. That kind of shows you that there is some sort of racism going on with Jews. There is some sort of discriminatory policies going on with Jews compared to non-Jews. And when you start digging into it, it really gets strong. See, it's one thing to say we're better. Our football team is bigger and stronger than yours. Our army is bigger and stronger than yours, right? And then you can have the ultimate comeuppance. You can say, well, that's okay. We're the chosen people of God. So if you go against us, God is going to go against you. Christ said, though, pretty cleanly and pretty smartly in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, excuse me, he said, listen, he says, you know, don't believe this stuff that God's necessarily going to not rain on your parade, but it's going to rain on other people's parades. He says that the rain will come on the righteous just as much as the unrighteous, which is kind of interesting. It's the nature of the world. That's what Christ said. But they had this ability. And then they presented God as a warlike God. God was going to build a war machine. I mean, we're talking about a ancient superpower. That's what Judaism was meant to be by Yahweh, which was a war god. And God was not a very forgiving customer. He was hardcore. He demanded you obey his laws. He demanded that you fight for him. He demanded that you, and if you didn't, God help you in the right way. God help you. Now, the things we've got to remember here is when I'm talking about these things, I'm not condemning the Old Testament. There is the argument, and certainly the Orthodox Church, Catholic Church, and other Christians, and Christians had very little of the Old Testament, almost none of it. Most people were illiterate. But what they did have was the teachings of Jesus Christ, was the teachings of Christ. That's what was really shared in the early workings of Christendom. And people fell in love with Jesus Christ from his words. His forgiveness, his love, his positivity, his healing. He wasn't going to come to bring you curses. He wasn't going to punish your unborn children for generations if you violated some law. No, if you were repentant, asking for forgiveness, he would forgive you and forgive you completely. And certainly wouldn't act to strike your innocent children who committed no crime, who made no transgression. Now that makes sense, I think, for most people. And most people, whatever their religion, whatever, or no religion, whatever it is, or the gods they worship, that doesn't really make much sense. To inflict pain and suffering and horror on a child for something they didn't do, something their parents or grandparents or great-great-great-grandparents did. It doesn't seem very just. There was a teacher named, I'm trying to give you a little background here, there was a teacher named Marcion, a very early Christian. He's responsible for putting together the first collections of the books of the New Testament, believe it or not. His name was Marcion. He was also in the Catholic Church. He later had some run-ins. There was a struggle for power. They say he was excommunicated, that he was deemed a heretic. However, there's not much evidence of that. Or they may have done that after he You know, he was out of the church. But Marcion, this was Marcion's take on this. He was a Greek ship owner, brilliant guy. He could speak Hebrew. He could understand and read Hebrew. He could read Aramaic. He could, you know, read Greek. And he could even read, you know, the Roman language, Vulgate and so forth. Very brilliant man. And he had access to the Torah. And he read the Torah. He read it thoroughly, what was available of it. And by that time, this is a couple hundred years after Christ, or 100 years after Christ. And by that time, you know, the Torah was available. The Septuagint was printed, or not printed, but published or copied and spread throughout the Mediterranean regions. And Greek scholars, and anybody could listen to Greek, understood it. So a lot of what we call in the Septuagint, which was believed to be done by Jewish scribes in about 236 A.D., supposed to be translation, but there's no real evidence that it's necessarily a translation. It may have been made up at the time. It's about events that took place long before, but it looks like it was created by Jewish scribes. And it was a very interesting thing because it was created after a whole series of losses by Judaism and Israelites against their enemies. And they just had this recurring story of defeat. They were defeated in the Torah by the Egyptians or captured. They later escaped from them, of course. They, you know, later they had run-ins with other people. They did the conquering and so forth against these other peoples in the Middle East. And they had many, many genocides. And they were told anywhere they walked, that was their earth, that was theirs. Doesn't matter who lived there. Doesn't matter who built that house or built that property or built that palace or built that road or built that center. That this was, you know, this was going to be, this is was your right. And if you were in a land where you were going to live, you had to kill everybody, essentially. You got to kill everybody, man, woman, child, whatever. And I like what Finkelstein says. He says people make this distinction between women and children and men. He says they're all human beings. It's just as bad to kill a man, a young man or an old man or whatever, as it is to kill a woman or a child, even though it's kind of a special evil, I guess, when you kill an innocent baby with their whole life in front of them. And we've always had a special relationship between mother and child. And that's understandable. It's always been considered a sacred bond, where a mother is giving her all and bringing this child into the world, giving its nurture, willing to risk her life for that child, keep alert for them, make sure they're fed, love that child, give them everything, die for them if necessary, go against a wild, ravenous beast against them. But you know, there was commandments often that were genocidal. Now, the way that Christians have dealt with some of these commandments, and it's interesting, because I really do admire the Orthodox Church, both the Catholic Orthodox, the Christian Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, the Greek Orthodox, you know, the Armenian Orthodox, lots of the Orthodox churches, the Middle Eastern Orthodox churches. And but they, the interesting thing was about that in Christianity is they did have that Old Testament, but they actually really focused on the New Testament. And that was the attraction. That was the attraction. Because the teachings of Jesus were so revolutionary and so beautiful and so loving and so positive. Jesus was a healer, not a condemner. He wasn't a person that tempted you all the time and made you go through these trials all the time to prove it. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the God of the Old Testament said that Abraham had to kill his first and most beloved son. He was going to slit his, put him on a stone idol or a stone altar, on this altar, and slit his son's throat. And he had to intend to do it. A lot of Christians obviously have some questions about that. Jesus Christ actually liked the questioners. And he said that you're not committing a sin by discussing these things and questioning these things. In fact, he had a lot of discussions with doubting Thomas, where Thomas wanted to see the holes in Jesus' hands. He wanted to see it. Seeing is believing. Trust but verify. That he wanted to believe. He wanted to know why. He wanted to know the truth. And Jesus constantly portrayed and constantly said that this battle that I represent for you is a battle for truth. And the lies of the scribes and the Pharisees also were constantly exposed and opposed by Jesus Christ. He called these scribes who were writing the scriptures and doing the oral tradition, which became the Talmud, that these people were absolute devils. He called these people that ran the synagogues of Satan. That was actually called in Revelation, but there's so much of it. In John 8:44, his whole ministry was nothing but battles of Jews trying to kill Jesus, hate Jesus, dispose of Jesus. It's horrible, right? And Jesus said, "Ye and your father, you are of your father the devil. You are of your father the devil, and the lusts of ye father, you will do." Your father was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. When he maketh a lie, he says what he is. He gives his very essence. He reveals his very essence to you, and he is a liar. A liar and a murderer. You can't get much worse than that, can you? Think about that for a second. That's what Jesus says to the scribes. And the scribes and Pharisees were the elite, the people that ran the church, the Jewish, not the Jewish church, it's not a church, but the Jewish religion, which was the most supremacist, racist religion possible. It was a religion that said the only people that mattered were Jews. Gentiles did not matter. Gentile lives are not important. Gentile children could be killed. Gentile children, little girls, little children, not virgins, little baby girls and little older girls, that they could be taken as the spoil of war. Kill all the men, kill all the women, but save the little virgins for yourselves. For your booty in war, which I think most people would find that bad. Now, a lot of Christians, apologists, will make up for this and say, well, that's simply because they were just using hyperbole. They're kind of like the Chargers and the Minnesota Vikings or something. We annihilated the enemy. But it's not really like that, because it makes clear sometimes this. And one of the most disturbing things, by the way, and I do think that Jesus Christ, and this is, again, I'm talking about this right now in the contrast with Christ, because I want you to understand why that religion is really key to what's going on in the world when you look at Jewish power. Because whether or not they're ostensibly in every line, and most Jews, first of all, I don't think there's a Jew alive in the world that can keep all the Jewish laws. The only person that could do that was Christ. And that was part of the test, I guess, he had to endure. But anyway, they don't. But the idea is, there was no eternal life until Christ gave it to us by his sacrifice. But Jesus went out of his ways. It's all over the New Testament. Listen, the people of God are the children. and all people, whether you're Samaritan, which Jews hated with a passion, whether you're Amalekites, whatever you are, if you're a child, you're of the kingdom of God. And all people, whether you're Samaritan or Jebusite or Moabite, whatever you are, God loves you and will forgive you and wants to take care of you and wants to heal you. He loves and forgives, just like Christ loves and forgives. But Jews were interested in building a military. Jews, according to the Old Testament, the Torah, by these Jewish scribes, was all about war. It was all about conquering all these other people, enslaving other peoples, murdering other peoples, killing other peoples. And a God of almost a capricious aspect of murder and destruction of life. I'm going to give a couple things. I don't want to shock anybody here. And again, I'm a Christian. And I think most of my audience, who are not Jews, believe in Christianity, and so you've got to understand from the very first that when I'm talking about different aspects of Judaism, Christ absolutely brought us a new covenant. And I know the argument is Christ said I came to fulfill it. But how did Christ say he came to fulfill it? He came to fulfill it by being a God of love, forgiveness, salvation, healing. That's what Jesus Christ said, which is very, very different than what's presented in a lot of what we've just been talking about. I'll give you a little short example of that. Now, one of the things Marcion did, he did this thing called the antithesis, and he pointed out the teachings of Jesus Christ. And I think then there's so many teachings like this, and Christ taught forgiveness, like the adulterous woman that Christ said, repent, while everybody was ready to stone the woman. Or the man that was working on the Sabbath, which was punishable by stoning. When the guy was just trying to fix his house so his house wouldn't leak, his kids wouldn't get sick, and he would have protection for his house. Because by Jewish law, if you even picked up a few sticks to put in your fireplace on a cold day, you know, you were breaking the Sabbath, and you deserved to be stoned. Jesus thought that was horrible. It's not right to give the people a death penalty when they're trying to do something that's needed for their family and their love. They're not trying to hurt God. And Jesus said to the man who was repairing his house, he said, I love you, and you did the right thing. Even though you did something that would be punished by stoning, by the law, what you did was right, because the law was not made to hurt you. The law was made to help you. That's the principle that's always got. It's got to be done in terms of love. There was a Greek... there was a Roman centurion, for instance, had a sick slave, a sick servant. And he saw the teachings and the miracles of Christ, and he asked Christ to heal his servant. And Christ said, yes, sir, I'll come to your house. Now, for a Jew to go to some centurion, some Roman house, that is like the biggest no-no in the world. That you're cavorting with, you're a traitor. You're a traitor to the Jewish people. We hate Romans. You can get stoned for that. And the Roman centurion was very smart and very kind and very believing in Christ. And he said to Christ, he said, listen, Christ, here's the thing. Thank you for offering to come. But I know you can heal my servant, even from anywhere in the world. You have that power. That's how much I believe in your power to heal and your power of love. And I know that if you say that my servant will be healed, it will be healed the same way if I give an order to one of my centurion officers or men to do something, they would follow that order. And Christ says, Christ turns to his other disciples and he says, "My God," he said, "this, if only the Judeans had faith like this Roman." In the New Testament, you have the conversion and baptism of Romans, which is totally against Jewish law. And Jews had all these strict laws to protect their Jewish ethnic identity, like circumcision. Because you had to, if you were an adult male, successful, and you're saying, "Oh, hi, Joe, we're working together, you were doing good, and you're a good businessman, I want to be a Jew, can I become a Jew, can I convert?" They said, the Jews would say, "Well, fine, Joe, great, you can become a Jew." It's just a little, it's just a little detail that you might have to consider, and that is, we're going to have a Jewish rabbi, what we call Mol, who is not a doctor, and we don't have any anesthesia, we don't have any antibiotic, and you're a grown man. It's not like you're a little tiny baby with a little tiny penis. You're a grown adult with a full-size male equipment and testicles and so forth. And but we're going to cut off half of your organ. And probably the most painful thing that you could possibly imagine ever enduring. It'll put you in bed a lot. You'll lose a lot of blood. You could even lose your organs if they get infected. You could even lose your life. And then after, when he does these incisions, he's going to come back and he's going to close up the wound and suck the blood from your organ with his oral parts, with his mouth. Does that sound appetizing? Does that sound something you want to do in that situation? So why do they do it to our only Jewish kids, 7 days out, got circumcised? But anybody that's non-Jewish, they have to have this barbaric thing. Muslims don't even, by the way, require that for adult males because they know how tough it is. And another good example of some of the deceptions and the lies, just like it says by the Mossad, from the Torah, it says, "By deception I shall wage war." There's a famous story of Jacob's well. That's another story where Jesus goes to Jacob's well and there's a Samaritan woman there. He goes to Samaria on purpose to make a point. To make a point to his Jewish followers and to Jews in general and to the Gentiles as well, that he loved everybody. And he was going to offer life and love and kindness and justice to all people. He didn't believe in Jewish supremacy. He didn't believe in Jewish Nazism. And by the way, Jewish Nazism is not National Socialism. Jewish Nazism is the Jewish version of Hollywood Nazism. It's the most vicious, hateful kind of creation. The Nazis that Jews worship and the Nazis that Jews portray themselves as and do as and act as are Jewish Hollywood Nazis. This is really true, but they're not, because Nazis in general would never brag that they're going to kill little children, little babies, and their mothers, because they knew that the German people or their own followers would say, "No, this is wrong. This is against every sort of decent ethical principle." This is, right? Jews don't care, though. And now you've got these Palestinians being massacred, genocided by these Jews. And I'm almost out of time. I got to be careful on the time here. Oh, my God, I think I might be out of time. I don't know. No, I'm not quite out of time. Still got a few minutes. Thank goodness I got a lot more to tell you. So, anyway, so Judaism was the ultimate racism. It's one thing to love your own people, want to preserve them. And by the way, when I was a young man, I joined the Klan. I admit that. I joined a nonviolent organization. And the reason why I joined the Klan, believe it or not, it wasn't because I wanted to repress other people. It wasn't because I hated other races. It wasn't because I wanted to enslave anybody or hurt anybody or oppress anybody or harm anybody or exploit anybody. It was because I didn't want my people to exploit any other people, because I felt that was a sin, that was wrong, that would be wrong, it was against the rules of God, and I didn't want that to happen to my own people. And I learned about Jewish supremacism. I read the New Testament. I read the New Testament. And I read the Old Testament. I read these things. And I realized that the Jews really weren't friends of the Gentiles. They were deadly enemies of Gentiles. And enemies of Christianity. And enemies of Jesus Christ. Not all Jews. But the Jewish elite. The Jewish establishment. And the Klan was a Christian organization, an organization that recognized that these Jews had certain designs on power. That a lot of these crazy Jews who were the masters of Judaism, and Judaism is not just those that follow the rituals of Jews, it's about really an ethnocentrism and an ethno-supremacy that is the most radical the world's ever seen. And they have major Jewish organizations worth tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars that work for what they see as Jewish interest, for the Jewish people's interest. And they have opened the borders of America and Europe because they wanted to change the demographic. And when I was literally 14, 15 years old, I realized what was going on in Israel. That they were, as Jews, they were going to replace the Palestinian people. And they were going to use terrorism against the British, terrorism against them. And I realized the horrible crimes that were committed. And so many Palestinians then were Christians as well, Christians and Muslims. Terrible, terrible crimes. And these were anti-Christ Jews. Violent, murderous, genociders. And I said to myself, what's the relationship between the communist Jews that were leading the world in communism and killing millions and millions of Christians? The communist Jews that Charlie knew about that killed millions of Christians in the Ukraine and the Holodomor. The corrupt, vile Hollywood Jews who created pornography and were the biggest promoters of pornography in the world. That were the biggest promoters of all sorts of organized criminal behaviors and prostitution and all sorts of terrible institutions across the world. And how that, according to the Bible, how do you know the Antichrist? He's the one who says of the Father, but not of the Son. You see, I'm going to tell you something shocking. And again, I'm not saying you got to believe any of this, but I just want to point out to you that whether or not you believe anything that Christ taught, you've got to understand that Judaism, if you look at it with an open mind and you read it and understand it, and you read even the Old Testament with an open mind, they despise Gentiles. And that's you. That's you and your fathers and mothers and grandmothers and grandfathers. That's your country, your values, your traditions. And they want to replace you, and they hate you. And they hate the faith of your fathers, which was Christianity in the Western world. Whether or not you're a Christian, we're not talking about that right now. What were we talking about? The New Testament says it so clearly that the Jews were enemies of all mankind. And you know what? They still are. Judaism really preaches that Jews are the chosen of God. Everybody else is second-class citizens. In fact, the guy that Jared Kushner worships along with Trump's daughter in the White House is Rabbi Schneerson. They go to his tomb. Rabbi Schneerson did a whole book called Conversations, and in that book, he literally says that the difference between Jews and Gentiles is not like even different races. I mean, Hitler talked about different races. Is this a Jew? Is this a German? They believed that Jews and Gentiles are like different species. It's like between animal and man. Only Jews are people. Only Jews are human beings. That's why the Jews were saying the Palestinians were nothing but human animals. When the people that truly acted like human animals were those Jewish Zionists who murdered and who have murdered hundreds of thousands of Palestinian men, women, and children, and brag about their genocides. Whether true or not, I don't know, but I do know one thing is that Judaism became corrupt. And who's saying this? I only got 2 minutes left, but I hope you can just soak in these 2 minutes and just learn the truth and go do your own research here. Christ said in John 8:44 to these Jewish Pharisees, his whole life was a struggle against them. And the Sanhedrin decided he needs to be crucified. And Jewish Talmud says that Jesus is being boiled in human excrement and semen, for God's sakes. There's an argument between Jews. Is it semen he's being boiled in for eternity and tortured, or is it excrement? Well, that's a good choice. So this is what Jews represent. This is what Judaism represents. Jews are Antichrist as a group, not all Jews. And I don't want to hurt Jews. I want to save Jews. In fact, the truth is they've become such Satanist people. They worship Satan. They've perverted God's message and said that, God, this warlike God, he sent them to war, supposedly, but it was the rabbis because they wanted to increase their own power. He sent them to war. And then they lost the wars, all these wars that were sent, just like we're going to be losing these wars too in many ways. And then guess what? After they lose the wars, it's your fault because you broke the law. It's always your fault. And then we're going to punish you for generations. We're even going to have you just sing cannibalism. And you're going to be captured by the people. You're going to be captured by the Babylonians. You're going to be captured by the Persians. On and on and on and on. I'm out of time, but you just got to understand, folks. Jesus Christ said to these Pharisees, you and your fathers are the sons of the devil. Your father is the devil. And the lust of your father he will do is a murderer from the beginning and abode not truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his very essence. This is truth. And I don't want to harm Jews or hurt Jews. I think Jews have been hurt by this conception of their religion as much as anybody. Look at the deaths that you see. You look at the Jews that have been sacrificed in these insane wars that their leaders have done, like Netanyahu and so forth. Today, of course, being the perpetrators of these wars, the first thing we got to stop is their horrible crimes against all of humanity. And I am dedicated to doing that and stopping these wars, as I hope all of you are. Put America first. I love you. I'll be back again tomorrow.